NCHC.TV studios. This is College Hockey West Weekly, brought to you by Jesse Ray's Barbecue at 308 North Boulder Highway in Henderson. Stop in for lunch, cater your next event, or just buy a couple of bottles of our award-winning sauces. The NCHC and NCHC.TV. Subscribe to NCHC.TV to watch the best in hockey since 2013. The TAG Creative Group. Search TGRANRUD at redbubble.com and let us create a unique design for you or your business. Caesars Entertainment Resorts and Casinos, where an iconic vacation awaits you at any of our destinations around the world. The Spaghetti Shack, classic Italian comfort food quickly with locations in Tempe and Pine Top. Order online at thespaghettishack.com. Liberty University, play for something more. Faith, education, and hockey at liberty.edu. College Hockey, Inc., your NCAA hockey resource. Jets Pizza. Sign up for our Crunch Club at jetspizza.com and have special deals delivered to your inbox. And by the Caesars Sportsbook app, a proud partner of the NHL. College Hockey West Weekly from the NCHC.TV studios is a part of the IceTimeHockeyWest.com network. Here are your hosts, Scott Strandy and Paul Hornstein.
Well, welcome in, hockey fans, and anyone that may be joining us this Tuesday evening on the middle of Frozen 4 weeks. Scott Strandy joining you tonight from beautiful Bloomington, Minnesota. My co-host, as always, Paul Hornstein from that big, beautiful palatial estate / command center on Long Island, New York. And our special guest this week, all week long, working with me, here at the Frozen Four, Nick Maxson, joining us from Apple Valley. As I drove up the 223 miles from Sioux Falls to Bloomington, I think I waved at Nick Maxson, or at least somewhere near his house in Apple Valley. So anyway, Paul, how are you?
I'm fine. Apparently, the one with the real command center, and I have the evidence to prove it, is
I
you.
Have no idea what you're talking about.
I have the evidence.
Well, I am unwinding. I realized to Bloomington, to Arapahoe Airport, where apparently that's where the Pioneers flew out of today, is about 1,000 miles. So I got that down. You know what I call that, Paul?
1,000 miles?
Yeah.
You call it 1,000 miles. That's a day.
I call it about one day.
Yeah. By the way,
it's great to be sitting in a very comfortable office / gaming chair as I do the show tonight. And
like I said,
feeling good.
Nick, just so you know, the guy we call, because he nicknamed himself, we got to call him Stat Boy 2.0, because I think that was used by somebody else in Connecticut. Mike Donnelly, Michigan State, 59 goals.
Or does he have it?
The record for goals in a single season.
Or does he have it?
Mike Donnelly? It was in 1986.
I thought you were
Which is funny, that. Paul, because that's 2 years after the freshman known as Brett Holt scored 52 in 84.
Nick, how are
you? Was he okay?
I heard he was okay. I think he was, he had a couple of, you know, years in the show, had a cup of coffee.
All right.
You
know.
Can still sing Gloria pretty well.
Yeah.
Or maybe he can't sing it at all.
Depends on when you ask him, I think.
Oh, well.
Nick, how are you?
Doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on again. Just a couple of days away now from all the fun and the glory is the Frozen Four. I know it was travel day for not only yourself, Scott, but for all the teams as well. So getting that much more antsy to see the final three games of the college hockey season, and cannot wait for it to get started. How about you guys?
See, I get sad when it's the last three games. It feels weird because I'm so used to trying to keep track of 95 games at once. Like, watching one game at a time is almost boring.
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm going to do when these three games are over? I'm headed back to California to start up another playoff series. So One way or another, I will be clean shaven on Sunday.
No, you won't.
Beard will start again on Monday for the AHL teams, because you know that's my tradition. The teams, we have teams playing. I grow the beard till they're done. The Denver Pioneers are holding out last hope. Couple of funny things, and we've got a great guest coming on here in just a couple minutes, but a couple of funny things I saw on Twitter today, and I want to get Nick's opinion on this because I asked Paul already. But Nick, they were sewing the Frozen Four patch on the Denver Pioneers home and away jerseys for this weekend, and somebody tweeted out, "Oh yeah, nice look next to that that dad wear logo." Implying New Balance. And our good friends over at Let's Go DU said, "Oh yeah, by the way, there are two teams in the Frozen Four that are New Balance schools." Your thought, Nick? Is that a big deal or no?
How do I put this into words? go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, let's if somebody's writing us a check, it definitely would change our opinion. That's all I want to say.
Opinion or the script? Which one is it?
Either one. It doesn't matter. Either one.
Nick, what are you saying? You'd use emojis instead of talking? Did we lose? Is he not fidgeting? Fidget.
Fidget. Yeah. So, you know, you have to connect to the younger audiences, guys. And to do that, you know, just like how Vegas always puts out their roster in all emojis, you know, sometimes you just have to communicate a little different way. now, with that being said, if you're going to go out and attack a sponsor on a college hockey team, do it with a little bit of candor, you know, or else, you know, you're opening yourself up to a great comeback from, you know, Let's Go DU and that account, which they're fantastic guys.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious. So I saw that. The other thing I saw over Twitter today were jets taking off and jets landing and guys coming up and guys getting into the XL Energy Center and getting a familiar look at their surrounding. This, the Twitter/X team's staff of each team is doing a fantastic job of lighting up the Twitter/X world with all the stuff that they're doing, like I don't know, we saw some from Michigan and BU and DU and BC. So I like this part of it. Nick and I are going to be right in the middle of it tomorrow, but I like the way this starts off. And we got a great guest that we're going to bring on that knows a little something about putting on a show at the X. So if you guys don't mind, let's not wait around. Let's bring on the associate commissioner from the NCHC, the best conference in college hockey, Associate Commissioner Michael Weissman. Michael, are you with us?
He's having too much fun listening.
I see him. If he hits a gray circle, I can connect him. So,
and by the way, while we wait for that, you sent me a link to a very interesting interview with the in terms of the portal with Northern Michigan coach Grant Pitalny. If the fans get a chance to watch that, it came out a couple of hours ago. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it yet, Nick. It's very, very interesting. They talk a lot about how things have gone down with the portal. I did not know he was the head of the Coaches Association, so we might have to track him down for a few things about the portal, and who knows, maybe putting a bug in somebody's ear about expanding this tournament or, you know, home regionals and things along that line.
Yeah, I have seen it. I have not had a chance yet to listen to it. Apparently, also, I saw on Twitter with that same interview, Paul, that the local media were invited to essentially watch but not participate / ask questions. That's a bit peculiar, but...
Yeah, I get that too, but...
Yeah, it's... The conversation around the portal is, I think, is heating up. It's gathering steam, especially from the institutional standpoint. You know, and we've been talking about this ad nauseum all week. You know, it's how do we find, you know, that right mix, that right number, the right whatever it is to allow athletes to participate in the way that they want to have that choice, have that freedom. And yet for schools like Northern Michigan, where Grant Pitalny has had success, but I think last time I checked, well, at least 11 or 12 of his players have entered the transfer portal. you know, there has to be, you know, some type of balance there. So I'm definitely curious to check out his interview because I'm sure it's going to be insightful. I know that. And NCHC coach Scott Sandlin would probably be on the same side of that argument, especially trying to protect some of the smaller institutions that play college hockey. So yeah, definitely looking forward to checking out that interview for sure.
And everybody should want to do that because that is what makes college hockey so unique compared to the other sports is the fact that you have a multi-level divisional, a multi-divisional schools competing at the top level in college hockey with big schools. And it's just, you can't replace that.
You can't, Paul. And I think that's the fear amongst, you know, some of that in our game is, you know, we've done such a good job to, as we do in this podcast, right? Our whole mission is to grow the game of hockey, right? And it does right. start at a grassroots level, you know, from youth hockey through the high school levels to AAA / juniors and now into college. And then obviously with, you know, obviously the ultimate with being the NHL. But, you know, you have to be able to protect what you have while expanding. And I think there is a fear with, and mind you, the transfer portal is one part of it. The NIL money, I think, does have a factor in this as well. You know, you combine that and, you know, the old witch's brew, as some would say, right? It's becoming a scary mixture, a scary solution that when you take a step back and look at it, you know, there's a fear that there's going to be some unintended consequences. And I'd be curious to see how this year's coaches convention down in Naples happens here in a couple of weeks.
Well, and it's you know, the smaller schools I get are kind of worried about the bigger schools making the jump into NCAA hockey. But outside of ASU, it hasn't been the quote rumor mill, at least, hasn't surrounded a whole lot of big Power 5 schools.
No, and I mean, just a few years ago, right, when ASU still was an independent, you know, we had rumblings of UNLV, UCLA, Oregon State. You know, there's teams that have great, successful club programs. Some at the ACHA level, was it Middle Tennessee, I believe, said that they were going to explore a program and then kind of reevaluate after a certain time frame. So the interest is there, right, Paul? But I think, you know, this is part of what they're all watching and what I believe is contributing potentially to them making the jump to either, you know, essentially go into Division One or to jump into like the game of hockey altogether. You know, there's still some roadblocks there that are and it's enough to keep them from jumping in the pool. And that's, you know, that's the opposite of what we want. You know, we want this game to continue to grow and especially expand out to the West Coast and certainly, you know, in the Southeast part of the country. You know, I think of Alabama Huntsville. You know, right? How great it would be to see them back in the fold, but still some work to be done, and you just hope that the committees and the coaches look at these things over the next few years and make. There's going to be some tough decisions to make, and you just hope that they make the right ones.
Well, that's what Boy. It comes down to, right?
Yeah, totally agree with you both. Let's see if we can bring on our special guest tonight, the associate commissioner from the NCHC, the greatest conference in college hockey, and the conference with a team in the Frozen Four. Michael Weissman, the associate commissioner, I think is with us. Michael, if you can hit one of those gray circles, I will connect you, and we'll start talking some hockey with you. I'm trying to plug in here, and I think I got him.
What have we been talking about?
Hold on. I think I got him.
Yeah, but what have we been talking about?
I don't know.
There he is.
I know, but we want to include Michael into the conversation.
Well, no, I know, but you said we can have him on and talk hockey. What the heck have Nick and I been talking about?
Michael Scott,
how we doing, gentlemen? Can you hear?
We're good, Michael. We're good.
Mr. Weissman, how are you doing, kind sir?
I'm sorry, I'm running a few minutes.
Oh, that's okay.
Good, how are you? I'm actually on. No, I'm good. I'm on my way home. On my way home from the office to go home and pack to go to the Frozen Four. You know, so
nice.
Just checking off all the errands before I go meet you guys in St. Paul.
Yeah, good. Because I was gonna say Nick and I are both here. Paul is in the command center.
I got the evidence otherwise.
Because the palatial estate, apparently the gates didn't open. They didn't get out or whatever.
Yeah, I know he didn't make it to the frozen face-off again this year, so I guess it's not surprising he wouldn't be at the X for the frozen four either.
I get it, but first of all, have you ever tried – again, we run into this issue of trying to get from Minneapolis to Minneapolis from New York. It's almost impossible.
That's no – doesn't make any sense. Tell Michael what you're really doing, Paul. Come on. Tell him what
you
mean
working?
No, tell him what you're doing.
Oh, well, yeah, I have been working on a little graphic arts.
Are you
a couple of ideas.
Are you redesigning our logo?
Maybe. I had a couple of ideas, you know, how do I rearrange some stars or maybe take one of the hockey sticks out and put a pitchfork in and that, you know, this way it's there but kind of not there, you know? It's a couple of good ideas I'm working on. I'm going to send them to you and make sure we get this done. No?
Michael, your thoughts on that craziness?
I think he's speechless, guys, because, you know, if Paul has trouble from getting from New York to Minneapolis, is he going to send these graphic designs via postcard? Is it going to be written on a paper napkin? Are you going to send it, you know, via a carrier pigeon? How are we getting these over?
Hey, some of the greatest ideas ever were written down on paper napkins in a bar.
Or on the sidelines, if you ask an NFL coach.
You know, Michael's speechless.
I know that route.
I mean, a lot of good ideas have started on napkins like the end. I did miss a little bit of your thoughts there, Paul. I'm not in great service right now, but
it's okay. We understand.
Michael,
to get home.
You want to hold on for a few minutes till you get in your place?
That's the thing about, you know, commissioners, right, guys, is, you know, Michael is he's driving. I hope he's not texting. I don't think he is. I don't think he's I think he's a law-abiding citizen. But, you know, getting off the office and then getting on a podcast while trying to travel home to get to traveling. I can only imagine what the agenda looks like for Mr. Michael Weissman. I'm sure it's pretty busy.
Well, especially this time of year. Right. And I'm just curious and this is like previewing the questions ahead of time, right? Like, how different would it be for him if there was no NCHC team in the Frozen Four? Now, I assume that as a conference official, as the associate commissioner, most of the conference commissioners and associate commissioners attend the Frozen Four, regardless of where they are.
And
so he'd kind of be going anyway, but I'm just curious what the difference would be in what he would be doing if, you know, as opposed to if there was no team from the NCHC in the Frozen Four as compared to this year where there is a team from the league in the Frozen Four. So he has time now to get an answer.
Here's a crazy question. We'll get that answer from Michael in a minute. Just let him get settled in. But my thought is this: is has there been very many tournaments of Frozen Fours without an NCHC team in the past decade?
Last year, right?
Really? That
last
might be
year
the only one.
Was about it.
That was it.
You know.
So, maybe this experience is like, you know, I don't know. It's old hat. You just go. But anyway, let's let Michael get settled in so he's not having to deal with that. And I've been, and I don't know if you guys, I know Paul hasn't. Nick, have you been to the NCHC offices in Colorado Springs?
I have not been sent the invitation just yet, but I hear the offices are pretty nice.
when you're in the offices, trust me, it's secluded. Let's just put it that way. When you come out of the Penrose area, I get where the signal is not the greatest, but maybe Michael's back. Michael, did you make it home yet?
I am in my apartment and made it home nice. Safely. So I apologize for the technical difficulties.
No problem. Did you hear Paul's question about whether you would be going to the Frozen Four, whether you had a team in it or not?
I did hear Paul's question, and I think it was Nick that answered it correctly, and that last year is the only year that the NCHC has not had a team in the Frozen Four. So I did go to the Frozen Four last year. Of course, it was in Tampa, so who wouldn't want to turn that down? I volunteered for the NCA as part of their staff, helping run press conferences, locker rooms. You know how locker rooms are open after games and after practices and things like that. So I offered my services for the NCAA and helped out with operations and some media activities in Tampa last year. But normally, yeah, we have a team or two there, and so I'm covering them on social media, and there's recaps to write and notes to prepare and things like that.
Michael, let me ask you this. I drove about 1,000 miles from Denver to Minneapolis, you know.
That's
about
a haul.
61,000 miles so far in the last 12 months. So I'm about ready to retire the 2014 Ultima. It's had about its better day. But anyway, you're hopping on a plane to get here to come to a very familiar site, but kind of bittersweet because there's only one more of these frozen face-offs at the XL. Has it started to sink in on you yet, or will that be after planning next year's event?
I think it'll probably more set in after next year. We certainly have talked about next year being our last Frozen Face-Off at Xcel Energy Center. And, you know, we want to try and make it special for the fans, for the players, for the media, for everyone. So I think we'll have some unique things, whether it's giveaways or various things that we do to kind of reminisce or remember the, well, I guess it'll be 11 years of the Frozen Face-Off at that point, and I believe 6 at Xcel Energy Center. So we've certainly, you know, thought about it, that knowing that next year will be our last one, but I don't know that reality maybe has sunk in that that'll be the last time I'm going there. I also think it'll maybe sink in a little bit in September when we have our, you know, theoretically last media day at Xcel Energy Center as well. So kind of a side effect of moving our championship to campus sites.
Michael, before the other two jump in with a question, I'm going to ask, do you have any more of those backpacks that you gave out? Because I found those backpacks to be really nice.
You mean the coolers?
Jeez.
Yeah, I guess it was a cooler. My wife took care of it today and put ice in it and put some drinks in it on the way up. So yeah,
I'm glad.
A cooler, I guess.
Perfect. Yeah. So it was perfect for the drive up then. I'm glad you're making multi-purpose use of it.
Well, you'll be happy to know, Michael, and I don't know if you saw it at the Sioux Falls Regional, or was it the St. Louis? It might have been both. I don't know. No, it was St. Louis.
Well, it was both, but St. Louis for sure.
There they are celebrating on the ice. And guess who's square in the middle of a picture with a cooler bag / backpack on? Taking pictures.
Scott was telling me about that. He was helping give the NCHC some free promotion, even though, unfortunately, our teams were not playing. And at that point, I was still in St. Paul then. But I was not at the game. Or sorry, St. Louis, but not at the game. But I was in St. Louis for that regional, certainly with our teams, with North Dakota and Western Michigan. Sadly, did not make it to the final. But I appreciate Scott getting some NCHC recognition on the ice anyway.
Yeah,
and
good,
by the
solid
way,
five
just so people know, look Nick and I up, because we've got some really good garb that you gave us, Michael. We always appreciate that. So we will be wearing the garb for a few days and staying ahead of Swaggy P / Peter Menino.
I'm glad that nickname is sticking with him, because I think it's
a good one
for him.
It's stuck.
Well, you'll be happy to know, Scott, that you and Nick and Paul make sure they send you some, because Scott took some for you too. That you got the new gear, the new NCHC gear before Swaggy P did. So
that is saying something, by the way.
It is. Menino is probably busy. They had a good year this year. They were busy with the games and things like that. So I'm sure I'll hear from them soon enough as we kind of head into the off season.
All right, jump in, Nick. You got a question for Michael?
Yeah, Mike, you know, I kind of want to continue on this role with the XL Energy Center and more so the campus sites. And I'm kind of curious, just because this has been a talk of conversation, you know, I guess from a conference perspective, and, you know, I'm playing fidget spinnery with my phone here, because apparently if I let the screen go dark, apparently so does my audio. So I apologize if it cut out there. But, you know, what do you get the sense is the momentum from the institutional standpoint, if there is any, or does the NCHC have a stance at all on the regionals going to campus sites? Or maybe do you have a personal take on that?
Yeah, good question. It's certainly a hot topic nationally right now. I think the NCHC in general as a whole, I certainly don't want to speak for every coach or every administrator, but in general, the majority of the NCHC schools and the conference as a whole support moving to campus sites, similar to what we're doing for our conference championship. Regionals, while certainly providing a neutral site, so to speak, the playing surface isn't always the best. The atmosphere isn't always the best. I think this year they tended to maybe do a little better just based on where they were and which teams made it. St. Louis being a small rink certainly helped as well. And I will say that that rink wasn't even full, to be honest, even though they made kind of a big to-do about it. The best atmospheres are when the students are going crazy, when it's a packed building, when it's loud, you've got the horns and the sirens and the music blaring, and the fans are on top of you. And that's what you get during the regular season. And I think our coaches and our administrators ultimately felt, for our purposes, for our conference tournament, that's what we wanted. Xcel Energy Center has been an amazing host and a great partner, and certainly is a world-class facility, but the atmosphere isn't always there. We're maybe not selling as many tickets as we would have hoped when we first started it. And so I think it's all about that atmosphere, and it's the same concept with the NCAA tournament. Why would we want to be playing, quote unquote, our most important games of the season in mostly empty buildings on bad ice, ice that was just put in a couple days before because they have to put in the team logos and the regional logos and all that. And some of these buildings don't even really host college hockey, and so they're not used to it at all. And I think there's just a lot of reasons. The other big thing that I tend to point to a lot when these discussions come up is, other than men's basketball and men's ice hockey, every other team sport that the NCAA sponsors, the first round or first two rounds of their championship tournament are all on campus sites. So whether that's women's basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball, soccer, field hockey, I'm sure I'm missing some others, but that's a laundry list of them right there. Lacrosse, all of those sports have their first and some even have their second rounds on campus sites. And so why men's hockey seems to be different. Women's hockey, I forgot them. Of course, they play on campus sites for the first round or two until they get to the Frozen Four. So I'm not sure, why men's hockey is singled out, along with men's basketball, but men's basketball certainly has no issue selling tickets and filling arenas regardless of where they play. So I think kind of all those factors of, most important games, playing them in front of our best crowds, a little bit of consistency across other NCAA championships, seems to be a good reason for going to campus sites. And I think, if we're going to support campus sites at the NCAA level, we kind of needed to walk the walk, so to speak. And I think you're seeing that with us moving to our conference tournament to campus sites.
And is it okay if I do a follow-up quick?
Yeah, of course.
So Mike, the other part of this is, I know at least, and correct me if I'm wrong, from either whether it was Josh Fenton or Heather Weems, the commissioners, was the financial impact on this event, right? I think if I heard them correctly, the conference as a whole had a nice financial, shall we say, benefit to hosting it as far as selling tickets. Does that change now the NCHC's financials at all going to campus sites? Or, is there anything you can tell me about that? I suppose, what does that look like in terms of how the conference benefits from this change?
Yeah, so you're talking about Frozen Faceoff finances, obviously, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Another good question. The Frozen Faceoff, along with the quarterfinal round, which is not really changing going forward, are the two biggest revenue makers for the conference. That's where we generate, I would say, 75 to 80% of our revenue, along with some from NCHC TV and licensing and TV rights and things. But most of it comes from the Frozen Faceoff and quarterfinal campus sites. And so certainly what the arrangement or the contract that we have at Xcel had some favorable terms to us. We did go back to them and see what they could do for us financially. But ultimately, I'll be surprised, and personally, I was a little honest. I don't know that financials were a huge factor in deciding to go to campus sites. Heather put together some great models looking at, here's what we've made in the Frozen Faceoff in the past. Here's what the model would look like based on past ticket sales with the future contract that Xcel was offering us. And then, as you guys know, our arenas, our barns across the NCHC vary drastically in size. you know, from Western Michigan, kind of below 3,000. Robeson's about 3,500. Miami's around that range, all the way up to, you know, the Ralph at almost 12,000. So depending on who hosts each round, and this is to some extent true even now with the quarterfinals, does have an impact on our bottom line. Now, we've been pretty fortunate, and other than I think the COVID year, we've been in the positive every season. I believe we're in good shape to do that again this year. But there, you know, there, that was something that has been brought up a little bit. Again, I don't think finances were discussed maybe as heavily as I was potentially expecting when these decisions were being made. But, you know, there is that scenario where it's Miami and CC and Western, you know, they all host quarterfinals, and then those are the teams that host the semifinals and the championship. And obviously that's a much smaller ranks or smaller ranks than even the number of people we put at Xcel Energy Center. And so naturally, I think you're, overall revenue would drop a little bit there. Hopefully, you know, there's some expenses that are going to drop too. We're not flying teams, you know, four teams to Minnesota or driving four teams, depending where they're at. You know, there's a lot of expenses that go into the branding and other things at Xcel Energy Center that we'll still do some of that branding, but obviously not knowing where it's going to be until a week before makes it a little tough to do a lot of that stuff. So I think there's probably, we'll potentially see some more fluidity in the bottom line revenues for the conference once we go to campus sites, just depending on where those semis and championships take place compared to kind of what we know we're going to make at Xcel for the most part. But ultimately, we feel pretty comfortable. The quarterfinals, as I said, really are not changing from what we do now. So the quarterfinal revenue more or less should stay static. Again, it depends who hosts, but over the years we've seen we tend to have a couple of the bigger arenas, a couple of the smaller arenas, and so it tends to balance itself out. But yeah, there could be a scenario where the smaller rinks, whether that's CC, Miami, Western, you know, they all host the semi, the quarters, the semis, and the championships. And then even if you're, you know, hopefully selling out the buildings, and you probably can raise ticket prices a little bit for semis and championship, you're potentially not making, if you know, the 10,000 ticket sales that we put in Xcel Energy Center. So long answer there, good question. And I think that is maybe a little bit of the unknown that we just, you know, we won't know until it happens, but we feel comfortable about it. Given some of the other things I talked about with the atmosphere, there's also a rest element to it that comes into it. And we do have some reserves kind of held from years past that we've stocked up. So we feel comfortable about it. And you know, if we have to adjust our revenue models or things like that, we'll do that. But we're comfortable with where we're at going forward.
Michael, well, I know Paul's got a question. Hold on a second, Paul. I got to get this in now that he brought it up. Okay. Paul's been talking about, you know, ASU's Mullett Arena would be a great place for 5,000 seats. And he's kind of touting that they might be there sooner rather than later. I don't know what that.
Probably I have not said people. A word like that. Don't lie.
for the whole tournament?
No.
Yeah, for hosting home sites. He's really thinking that team might be there. But anyway, I'm giving him a bad time. But I want to ask you this because you brought up the rest thing. And I know Heather brought it up when we had her on as well a while back. To me, this year was really the perfect storm for DU. They wanted to win the Frozen Faceoff in the worst way. And I've been around the program for 4 or 5 years now. And those guys were convinced that they needed that Frozen Faceoff trophy at home with them. But then they also realized that they might be going to Springfield another day or two later, and they had a snowstorm to contend with in Minnesota and flights to get prepared and all this different thing. Just your thoughts, as much as you can say, about what you thought about Denver, first of all, making the trip and how they represented the NCHC and their own university.
Yeah, well, first off, kudos to the University of Denver and David Carl and that whole program for getting to the Frozen Four under the circumstances you basically just described, which were, you know, they're the number three overall national seed and number one seed in the regional, and they're basically treated like they're the worst team in the regional. They get shipped cross country. They get scheduled with literally the very first game of the tournament at 2 o'clock on a Thursday after they didn't even get home until Sunday. So they had to leave on a Tuesday, get home Sunday, leave Tuesday, fly cross country, practice Wednesday, play 2 p.m. Eastern, which is noon Mountain time. So I don't even know if their body clocks had adjusted. They were in the Central time zone, then the Mountain time zone, then the Eastern time zone. And, you know, David Carl has been kind of one of the leaders banging the drum for campus sites for the NCAA tournament. And as you said, this was kind of the perfect storm, or maybe the unperfect storm for them, of where, you know, they did win the Frozen Faceoff. They had some success, celebrated, but then had this the shortest possible turnaround, have to go cross country, play a team hosting the regional, you know, that's 30 minutes away in their state. Even though they're the one seed, and unfortunately it's happened to teams. It happened to Miami back in 2015. They won the Frozen Faceoff, got shipped out as the one seed to go play Providence in Providence, and Providence won that game, and then of course went on to win the national title. But it does seem like we're maybe rewarding teams for the wrong things. You know, UMass was rewarded as a four seed for hosting a regional, and so they got basically a home game. Same thing, like I mentioned in 2015 with Providence, and it paid off for them, right? They ended up winning the whole thing. And it's happened out west. I mean, Denver's hosted regionals a couple times. They've been the higher seeds in those cases, but that they would have been there either way. Omaha was a three seed this year, right? And they got to play at their regional in Sioux Falls. To me, it just seems like we're rewarding the wrong thing, right? You're rewarding for basically paying to host a regional, even if it's not in your building. It's usually pretty close to your building. And it seems like we should reward the teams that earned it on the ice rather than through some sort of a bidding process. And so I think that's the biggest thing. You know, it was unfortunate that they happened to get the Thursday game. I'm not sure how those schedules are determined, you know, who plays in what regional. And, you know, maybe because BC was out east, they got to play the later Friday, you know, the Friday-Sunday regional instead. But it did seem a little unfair that the number three national seed had to go through all that. And then obviously they withstood it, but they were with three Eastern teams. And, you know, I don't have a great solution, but yeah, it definitely didn't seem right. So, incredible, run by Denver there. Matt Davis was stellar. I watched both games in St. Louis. Thankfully they represented the NCHC great, and we do have a team in the Frozen Four. Because yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to have, you know, back to back years of no NCHC teams in the Frozen Four. Would have been tough.
I have one quick follow up for you. Just going to get your thoughts on this, and then Paul can jump in. When I was at DU on Thursday, I thought David was really relaxed and refreshed. I thought the players were, and I commented, Michael, earlier in the week. I said, I think going to Springfield, they have like a 1,000-pound boulder on their shoulder. And after they won that first game in double overtime, I think it reduced itself to about a 500-pound boulder. But seeing them back in Denver on Thursday, it looked like the chip was completely gone. The boulder was gone, and they were just like, hey, you know what? Now we're just one of four teams, and we're ready to play hockey.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that was a very stressful week for them to basically play four games in the span of eight days, against high, you know, top 15 teams, high level competition, all away from home in a different time zone. And I saw some of David Carl's quotes, you know, talked about, you know, his banging of the drum for regionals isn't real, or for campus sites for regionals isn't really for them. Cause they'll, you know, as they showed, they can go out east and win. And, you know, they've been to, I think, five of the last eight Frozen Fours, and they'll play anyone. They go out east during the regular season a lot of times to play, whether it's BC or Providence or some of those Hockey East teams. So, you know, I think there was maybe a little bit of comfortability in knowing that they have been out east in the last couple of years. But, I could understand why they felt like, you know, a weight was lifted off their shoulders. And one other thing I forgot to mention, just going back to the hosting of the regionals, I believe, and I guess I'd have to double check myself, but in men's basketball, I'm pretty sure if a university is hosting a regional, their school cannot be at that regional that they're hosting. So I believe it's the opposite rule in men's basketball as it is in men's hockey.
Okay. And so now just a few random things. They're all connected for the most part, but one, will conference tournaments goes to campus sites, will the semifinals still be one and done?
Yes. So yeah, it'll what Denver had to do is play two quarterfinal games Friday, Saturday, and could have played three, you know, like St. Cloud had to play three, right. Omaha had to play three. So they could have played three games, then Friday, Saturday, and Frozen Faceoff. So five games in the span of like seven, eight days, basically. And then they would have had those two more games. So they could have played seven games in the span of like 14 days. And with the model we're going to, where it's a single game semifinal one weekend, then a single game championship the following weekend. Instead of playing five games over those 2 weekends going into the NCAA tournament, they would have played two games over those 2 weeks going into the NCAA tournament.
Okay. Now, I've seen a bunch of different things, and that schools can bid to host regionals on campus, but they shy away from that. Is that accurate, or am I misreading what I thought I saw the committee chairman say a few weeks ago about regionals being on campus? If they not in terms of how they would get that, but the bidding process that they have now.
So I didn't see, I'd have to see those exact comments, but in historically over the past, I don't know, half dozen or so years, or really maybe even a dozen years since they kind of went to this format, they have pretty much shied away from having regionals in a true college hockey venue or arena. The lone exception to that that I can think of was in 2015. I believe there were no other bids at quote unquote neutral sites. And so they did award it to Notre Dame at Notre Dame's Compton Family Ice Arena in South Bend. Okay. I actually got to go to that one in Omaha, won the regional and went to their lone Frozen Four that year. But it actually, ironically, Notre Dame did not even make the tournament that year, so they didn't even get to play on home ice. That's the only time I can recall a true campus arena hosting the regional. Now, I know like North Dakota, when they bid, they will bid the Ralph and down in Fargo, or they'll bid the Ralph and Sioux Falls, knowing that most likely the Ralph is not going to get it.
Okay.
So maybe that's what the chairman, Jeff Shulman, was talking about a little bit. Was that, you know, they'll look at bids, but if there is a quote unquote neutral site, even if it's, you know, Fargo an hour down the road from Grand Forks, they would rather play it there than in the Ralph directly. And so I think that's kind of what schools, and I think maybe Omaha even did that bidding, you know, bidding on Baxter Arena and, you know, at the Denny Sanford Center in Sioux Falls, on the off chance that there either weren't enough bids or the committee would award it on the campus sites. But I haven't seen anything that says they will actually award them to a true campus site, you know, in that city, in that venue.
Okay. So that the follow-up question to that is, now I know that they're out, you know, that the schedule is out for the next 2 years after this. Do they have a lot of problems? And maybe you don't know. Do they have a lot of problems getting neutral sites to bid on these? I mean, I know some of them tend to be relatively in a cycle, but
yes,
it tend to be an issue.
That's a good, great question. And without me being, you know, ever being on the committee or directly involved,
right?
And those, you know, I'm not seeing what bids come in, what don't. But having worked in college hockey for over 15 years now, or about 15 years, I would say that bids in the West are much tougher to come by than bids in the East. You talked about a cycle. I mean, the East ones, it rotates between what, Manchester and Worcester and Providence and Albany and Bridgeport,
Allentown.
Yeah, but even Allentown was considered a Midwest regional, if you recall, right, a couple times.
Oh, that's so right. Yeah,
that's
somehow
that's how poor. Because I think St. Cloud was even there. Maybe I'm not sure if you were gone yet, Nick, but you might have been there.
I was there. That was the last my senior year at St. Cloud. That was the semifinal loss to Quinnipiac in 2022. Yes,
I think that was considered a Midwest regional, if I'm not mistaken. So that kind of gives you an idea of how few bids they have out West. They seem to kind of rotate between those five or six that I mentioned in the East: Providence, Worcester, Bridgeport, Manchester. I might be forgetting one, Albany. But you know, not trying to knock those buildings, but a lot of those buildings are older. They're older AHL buildings that don't host college hockey. They're not the nicest facilities. I mean, we have, you know, think about even in the NCHC. I mean, the Ralph, Baxter, Magnus, Miami, Robeson. I mean, you got some beautiful, you know, state-of-the-art barns that are relatively new, and we're playing in, you know, 30-year-old rinks that are older. And You know, and even out east, there are plenty of nice barns that, you know, to play at. But in the west, yeah, it's tougher. I mean, you see it, Fargo, Sioux Falls, Loveland has hosted a couple times lately. I think Denver even bid this past year. I'm not sure, or for this 2024 cycle, I'm not sure why they didn't get it. And they put it in St. Louis, which maybe they just wanted a new city and some new blood. So potentially that's why they gave it to Maryland Heights, but it is tough to get arenas in the West. There's, you know, it's either got to be a USHL arena. There's a couple AHL arenas in the Midwest, but not a ton. I think there's one in Iowa, and they tend to be on the coasts a little bit more or down south. And so there's just not kind of that right size arena. The right size arena are the college arenas, and as we said, they won't put regionals there. So there's a couple of USHL arenas that could work, and that's, you know, that's where the one in Fargo is and things like that. But there's just, you know, a limited possibility. In the state of Minnesota, you have the Xcel Energy Center, but that's too big for a regional.
Right.
And then your other regions would be AmSoil and Duluth or the Brooks Center, and those are college arenas, and they won't, you know, 3M Arena, they won't put them there. So that's where we run into some issues. Toledo has hosted in the past, the ECHL team in Toledo. Miami played there actually when I was the SID there. That was my last game at Miami. They played up there. They actually lost to St. Cloud, Nick. That was Johnny.
Awkward.
They've tried to spread it around to some different cities in the West, but there's limited options, and they don't draw unless Denver's playing in Loveland, unless North Dakota's playing in Fargo. You know, even when Miami was in Toledo, yeah, they had a couple thousand people, but it wasn't great. Certainly wasn't as good as you'd probably draw if you were on a campus site.
Michael, could we make a suggestion and maybe play it in Coachella Valley in Palm Springs in that brand new 10,000 seat venue? Could we bring a West regional there? That's cool.
I was just out there this summer, Scott. I would be all for it. You know, I think we got to get some more teams out there. We got ASU. I heard you guys talking at the open about some of the Pac-12 kind of rumors and UNLV, and I don't know how serious those were. UNLV, I know, is pushed a little harder than maybe some of the other.
They were close.
The fleeting Pac-12 schools, I guess we'll call them, or soon to be soon to be Big Ten schools. which maybe that's a good thing. I don't know, but if we get some more teams out there, I think I want to say 2007, sometime. Or maybe it was older than that. Didn't Irvine, California host a Frozen Four, Scott? The Western College hockey expert, I feel like you should know that.
Yep, they did.
So they've dabbled out west before. I don't know. It's going to be in Las Vegas here in 2026. So they're working their way west. I think regionals are tough to put out there because pretty much all four teams would have to travel, and you're far away from any college hockey team. But a Frozen Four,
unless you're Paul's team,
they can certainly bid on a regional wherever they want to bid on a regional.
By the way,
we are in the works on a Frozen Four bid with them in a Western locale. So not a regional, but a Frozen Four bid.
By the way, I know that arena too. I had some insight with Heather Weems. I'll leave that for you, Mike, though.
All right. Well, you know, I mean, we've had some talks with Seattle, so we'll see where that goes. But us and ASU have talked with Seattle about putting in a Frozen Four bid, but I'm not sure exactly when those are due, or maybe they were. No, I don't think they were due yet for the next cycle. So,
well, Michael, just don't wait around for the new building in Arizona to be built. To be put in there, because that's a long ways away.
You guys would know much more than that. I do enjoy their social media. You know, I don't know if I'd call it trolling or promotion or joking or what it is, but it's something. It's something.
All of the above.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Nick, you got another one for Michael?
Yeah, and here's the other thing, Mike, because what about the broadcasting side of things? Not that I have a personal interest in this, not at all, but you know, when you but in all seriousness, right, when you had and this kind of goes back to the NCHC level with the semifinals, when you had it in one building, you could have one crew, the CBS crew, Alex Heiner, Dave Starman, do an excellent job along with Shireen. At that model, you would need two crews for the semifinals. Am I not correct? So is there an idea of what that broadcast package would look like in terms of how you would plan to broadcast that?
Yeah, excellent question. So our current contract with CBS Sports Network runs through, I guess, either next or the upcoming season, however you want to look at it, 24-25, which kind of aligns well, obviously, with when we're going away from the frozen face-off in Excel. So I think that will be part of that discussion of the next kind of contract or next round of negotiations. We made CBS Sports Network or CBS aware that we were moving away from Xcel Energy Center and that frozen face-off model to a campus site model, you know, two semifinal locations, a 2-week semifinal and championship, 3-week tournament. And, you know, they are not looking that far ahead right now.
No.
So that, you know, they were like, we appreciate the heads up, but, you know, we can't give you an answer on, yes, we can do both semifinals, or we can't do either semifinals, or we can do one. They, you know, they're worried about the 2024 fall football season and probably nothing beyond that right now. So,
yep.
So in terms of their involvement, I don't really know. If I had to just purely speculate, I would guess that they would probably do neither semifinal, and they would potentially just do the championship game, wherever that is. I think not knowing where the location is going to be until a week out, even for the semifinals, and the same would be true for the championship, is tough on them. Not to say they can't do it, because they do it with conference basketball tournaments and things like that. But I don't think they can do it as easily as maybe ESPN does it when they send crews to all the regionals for, you know, baseball and softball and lacrosse and all that stuff. So I think that would be a challenge to have certainly two different locations on semifinal weekend. The other thing kind of working against us is that weekend that will now be our semifinal weekend is the conference basketball championship weekend. And so I'm pretty sure all airtime will be dedicated to conference basketball tournaments, whether that's men's or women's, quarters, semis, championships, because that would be that exact weekend. Because right now our championship or the frozen face-off, as you guys probably know, is the opening rounds of the NCAA tournament. But the weekend before that is conference basketball champion tournament basketball championships, and so we'd be competing with them, and I know CBS televises a lot of those. And so my speculation is, yeah, both semifinals will end up on NCHC TV with a television type production, so certainly wouldn't be like a radio broadcast, and potentially it would be even Starman and Heinert, or we bring back a Ben Holden or something like that, or maybe you, Nick, I don't know.
Yeah, there was no application there for that. No, that's out.
Yeah.
Well, there's two semifinals, so we need two right. crews. So,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we briefly talked about that yes, we would up our, you know, the quality that some of our schools use for their current streams would not be good enough for our tournament semifinals or our tournament championship. Mm. You know, I would hope that CBS could still do our championship game, but again, they wouldn't know the location until a week before, so that adds a little bit of a wrinkle there. They would also only be traveling their crew for one game instead of three games. And so that whole, you know, the cost of, you know, producing basically three games now becomes the cost of the same, more or less the same cost of producing one game. Mm-hmm. I guess it's one extra day. So there's a little bit of hotel and stuff at the current frozen face-off model. But again, you're getting three games in the same location versus just one location in a more random unknown location until a week before. So again, nothing certainly has been decided on that. That's something we'll have to discuss both with the membership, which NCHC TV is a high topic at our annual meetings for this year, just about the overall quality of streams, certainly from some of our teams. But going back to the tournament in 2025, yeah, that would be a higher level production on NCHC TV for the semifinals is my guess. And potentially the championship if, for whatever reason, CBS can't do the championship. But hopefully CBS would still do the championship. We would keep potentially, you know, like what we have now. Maybe it's 8 regular season games, and then they would just do the championship. So you lose a couple games. But that will be – that CBS portion and the stream quality kind of is something that we'll all be discussing at our annual meetings down in Florida here at the end of this month.
Okay, first of all, Nick's not the only one that cares about that. Just so you know,
you do play by play, Paul.
But not in a while, but I have.
Okay,
I spent a lot of years in college doing it because eventually they kicked me out and they wouldn't let me stay.
Well, but that's another story. 8 years
would require you to travel and leave Long Island, though, Paul.
Well, again, you know,
We're not doing remote play-by-play or anything.
No. But by then I'll be close to retirement. So by then I'll be close to retirement. So it's a little easier to get out. Okay, that's one. You know, as far as the streams are concerned, we could spend hours on that just for one school, but we're not going to do that.
Yeah, let's not. Just know that it's a high priority for me and for
them,
the staff of the NCHC, to get that across to the conference. Certainly certain schools, and I don't want to get into the weeds too much, but I get it. We've reached out to Hockey East to get theirs, basically ESPN Plus's standards. And I can assure you that I would say maybe half or at least a handful of our schools are probably nowhere near those standards. So whether the membership agrees to adopt those standards is another story.
Right.
But if those are approved and we will be pushing for those, then you would almost be guaranteed to see a massive upgrade from some schools. And the ESPN Plus standards don't allow for even radio broadcasts. So you would have to have a TV commentator, neutral TV commentator calling games.
Two things. One, I do want to shout out, and I don't know if we've had a chance to talk about this, but I heard an interview with the athletic director at Denver, and they recognize the importance of atmosphere, especially for their team. And they are renting a pep band.
I saw that.
They are renting a pep band. Edina High School pep band, yeah. So
I heard Josh was going for the, you know, Edina's won several state championships, so he was hoping the luck kind of carried over into Excel.
Imagine Josh on that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure we got that out there. And the other thing is, as we talk about this, And you know, it's not like I've ever said this before. Home regionals, AQs 1 through 6, top 2 at large, 7 and 8. They play 2 out of 3 at home. This way, every league gets a home playoff series. So when it comes up, you can just tell them this is the best idea, and you know, you can pass it around. I won't even have to take credit for it.
Hey, Paul, I will agree to that as soon as the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments give every conference a higher seed for their auto bid.
Well, we're not talking about basketball here.
Oakland and yeah, but it's the same concept. I mean,
I do agree with that. I do. I'm not saying you're wrong, but you know, that's a different story. They don't play home games in men's basketball.
Women's basketball, they do.
Yeah, okay. That's, again, you win your conference. You know, I think that should matter.
Now, I'd be more supportive of your idea, Paul, and this is way out of left field and maybe a little bit unrelated, but I'm more in favor of the auto bids going to the regular season champions than the conference
champions. I'm okay with that, too. I'm very okay with that.
Because that's a much harder thing to earn than, you know, And it really only it's really only an issue, I suppose, maybe for Atlantic Hockey and the CCHA to some extent this year. And it's not even always the case for those conferences, but certainly in basketball, it's, you know, you have teams that go like 15-1 in conference play, and then they get knocked out in their conference tournament, and that's it. And it's like, really, they just ran through the conference, but they had one bad game, and now they get, you know, they're done like that. So anyway, side topic, but to your point, Paul, I'd be more supportive of, yeah, if it was a, you know, a regular season champ instead of a team that got hot and won 3 games or something like that.
That's fine. I have no problems with that. But the only, you know, teams are not going to give up, you know, the conference tournaments all of a sudden.
No, and that's and kind of countering my own point is, yeah, I mean, the conference tournaments become a little bit irrelevant if the auto bids, you know, are already given out. Then you're really just playing, I guess, for a trophy that may or may not mean something to you.
Right. I mean, at least this way, and again, that shares the wealth, right? Because the whole point of, at least in theory, 10 years ago or 15 years ago when they did this whole pairwise thing, and we're not going to get into that, I promise.
That's out of my control, man. I got nothing
to do
with that.
No, I know, but the idea was they said that they were doing it this way to get teams to go on the road. Well, I mean, it's supposed to benefit the smaller schools too. It was great that North Dakota went to BU. And
so
I don't think
there is a weighting system that favors a road game. Basically, you get 1.2 to 0.8 for a home game.
Right.
Or a home win, I guess I should say.
Right. I just, to me, it was great. You know, Penn State went to play a game at Mercyhurst this year. North Dakota's never going back to Buffalo, but they did do it. That's what we need more of.
I agree with that 100%. I'm all for the bigger dogs going to the smaller schools and playing them there. I think it's great for those cities and those teams to get to see the, you know, whether it's BU, BC, North Dakota, Minnesota, whatever, live and in person and see some future NHL players and first round draft picks and things like that. So I have no issues trying to, you know, pair up some of the teams that are, you know, quote unquote on the lower end of the pairwise or in some of the lesser conferences with some of our schools going out there. I think that's great when they do that.
Yeah. Michael, I don't want to be the reason why you missed your flight. So
my flight's not for – I got 11 and a half hours, Scott. We're good.
Yeah, if he misses that, he's got bigger problems.
Yeah, no kidding.
I do still need to pack and eat some dinner, though. So.
He still needs to pack. And give the guy a break, man. Put up with me last Friday. So
that's right. He made me come into the office when I was working from home, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Oof.
Hey, Michael, we appreciate your time. Apparently, Paul said that dinner and drinks are on him a couple of nights this week. So,
really? Isn't everything on me? But that's another story.
when are we doing dinner, Scott and Nick? If it's on Paul, I mean, shoot.
I mean, does that mean it's Manny's or Murray's or,
yeah, I was
you know?
Say, what's the one, the really old Taco school Bell. One? Down 7th Street there.
Oh, geez.
I should know this. 60s, 70s steakhouse. Mancini's?
Mancini's. Mancini's, yep. There you go.
That's where we'll go. Mancini's.
He said he'd be happy to do it if you get one of those nice backpacks from the Frozen Face-Off.
Well, the problem is not getting it from Michael. The problem is getting it from you.
Hey, just so you know, I forgot to take one for myself, so I didn't even have one of those coolers yet. I'm hoping there's one left for me still to get. But
Michael, we appreciate your time. In safe flight to St. Paul. Enjoy the Frozen Four. We'll see you, I'm sure, multiple times roaming around the X, since you know that as well as anybody.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Hopefully Denver can get his national title number 6, but should be some great games. Got some great teams there and big brands, and look forward to seeing you guys and all the other media. Should be a great time.
48 NHL.
Yeah, great discussion, Mike.
48 NHL draft picks on scene, and probably the number one overall pick playing on ice with Denver. So we'll find out.
Yeah,
Michael,
absolutely.
Weissman, thank you so much. Have a good night. We'll see you in just a couple of days.
Thanks, gentlemen. Look forward to seeing you up in St. Paul, Nick and Scott. And Paul, we'll think of you.
Yeah. Appreciate Thanks, that. Mike. Great discussion, Mike. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. We'll be right back to wrap up another episode of College Hockey West Weekly.
It's time to drop the puck on the nation's best college hockey conference. We bring you closer to the action all season long with access to exclusive on-demand content and more than 140 live games. Catch every big goal and clutch save. When you can't be there, we have you covered here. Stream on your phone, computer, or straight to your TV, and don't miss a moment from your favorite team. Subscribe now to watch the best in college hockey at NCHC.tv. If it's NCHC hockey, it's on NCHC.tv.
The St. Louis Sports Commission invites you to become part of the legacy of the heartland of hockey as they and the city of St. Louis host 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships. From the Stanley Cup to college champions to an exploding youth hockey community, St. Louis hockey has a long storied tradition. Find out how you can be a part of it by visiting us at www.stlsports.org. The St. Louis Sports Commission, making St. Louis a better place to live, visit, work, or play through sports. After a hard day at work or a long week, what's better than good comfort food to put you at ease? At the Spaghetti Shack, we say the answer is comfort food that's made by somebody else. The Spaghetti Shack has taken spaghetti and meatballs, the classic Italian comfort food, to a portable level. ASU alumni owned and operated the Spaghetti Shack has three locations. At 6340 South Rural Road in Tempe, the ASU location at 922 East Apache Road, and 952 West White Mountain Road in Pine Top. For lunch, dinner, or catering as well, call us at 480-687-2485 or order online at thespaghettishack.com.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious,
visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
Coming to you from the NCHC.TV studios, ITHSW Podcast presents College Hockey West Weekly.
Indeed it is, College Hockey West Weekly. Scott Strandy with you tonight in Bloomington, Minnesota, as we prepare for the practices and the press conferences and all the stuff going on with the Frozen Four. Paul Hornstein hanging in there on Long Island, New York, with the Palatial Estate and the Command Center. And Nick Maxson joining me not far from his home in Apple Valley up to the XL Energy Center. So, guys, we're well over time, but just want to get your thoughts real quickly on Michael's conversation and then also about tomorrow. So, Nick, let's start with you.
So I'm going to read in between the lines, Scott. I don't know if you heard this, too, and Mike's probably going to kill me for saying this, but that's okay. It sounds like there is a movement. If you're going out and asking Hockey East about broadcast standards, just like how Netflix has. I mean, most people probably don't know this, but there's specific equipment that gets approved. There's certain codecs. It gets really detailed, right? ESPN and ESPN Plus have similar requirements to be able to essentially even ask for a package. Did you get the same sense, Scott, that the NCHC is potentially exploring a contract with ESPN and ESPN Plus? Because to me, you talk about what's the next step for the league in terms of not just expanding in terms of, you know, member schools, but what could be driving more revenue. I get the sense they're really looking at potential new broadcast partners, and that might be one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a must when you start talking about the semifinals being on campus in 2 years. You're going to want that quality, as Michael mentioned. To be above standard. And then, of course, the championship game. And NCHC TV is as good as it gets almost in streaming for college hockey anywhere in the country, short of ESPN Plus, obviously. But I'm sure Paul would be thrilled at that.
I will say this, as somebody who watches a lot of these, okay? I was not kidding when I said we could spend hours talking about this. And I could spend a couple of hours myself talking about one school in particular.
Could you do a critique, Paul?
The biggest part that when I watch is you're doing it through the video board. Come on, let's get some cameras in there. Nick, you're much more familiar with the technology than I am. It can't be that much more difficult to get a couple of cameras in there, two or three, because that's all the video people use is two or three. To do this
a bit more than that, but sure.
I don't know. Okay.
But Paul, it's about the cost. I'll give you a really good example, right? So if you look at, let's let's bring it close to home. If you go to UBS Arena there on Long Island and watch the Islanders, which may be playoff bound, right? And you look at their broadcast camera, that big rectangular shoebox looking lens, right?
Right. Yeah, but most of these schools don't use that.
Fidget.
You know, most of these schools don't use cameras that big for these streams.
Oh, yes. And that's the problem is, well, here's the issue. ESPN would require that type of upgrade because it has to be, because mind you, from the time that you take the native signal, right? Here's an even better example. When I broadcast junior hockey, they asked as the league for a lot of their home schools to upgrade to 4K cameras. Right. Yet when they transmit the signal, it's usually in 1080. And then by the time you watch it, it's about 720. Okay. So the idea is everybody gets up to that level at some point, and then you can upgrade the codec, which is also a huge expense.
Okay. Again, we could talk about this for hours. And, you know, over the summer, I'm sure we'll have enough, time where we can do that. I just sit there and I know that Omaha, for example, I like what they do. Now, is it perfect video? No. But love their simulcast. Love their simulcast. I can't say that about all of the others.
I want to go back to 1977 and 1980 where we listened to it on radio and you got to love the voices. I'm kidding.
Well, that's what I grew up on.
I know. But you're old.
I am old.
And I'm not that old, so.
Anyway. That's why I'm saying Nick would have much more of an idea of the equipment.
Because I can see him. I just can't hear him.
I'm here. I'm just letting you guys hash it out here. Really, guys, it comes down to cost. And it comes down to meeting that standard. And it's black and white with, like I mentioned before, with Netflix or ESPN Plus. Either you have the equipment to basically even put an application in or you don't. That's just how it works, right? So it's not a matter of ability. It's a matter of money. And here's the thing, though. If you can invest in the money, and let's be honest, right? I think if you can attract ESPN for that broadcast rights, that could open up some new national sponsors. You talk about the return on investment on that. I think that's what the NCHC is really looking for. And you can expand your footprint and potential viewership with that as well. So I think overall, the benefits of that would be humongous, but that initial investment would be pretty painful. That's something they're having to explore, and I'm with you, Scott. I think they need to, and I think they know they need to. Otherwise, why would you reach out to a conference that has that already in place to talk about what it is that it, what does it take to get to that point? And more so, what's that bottom line sticker price look like? Because that's really what's going to separate them between getting it and not.
I'm just trying to get the ref mic announcements to hear those. I'm not even talking about anything crazy.
Okay, we can go on to this forever. We're about 13 minutes over right now, but great conversation with Michael. Nick and I will have more, I'm sure, during the week here at XL Energy Center. Paul, take it away and get us out of trouble.
From the NCHC.TV studios, College Hockey West Weekly has been brought to you by Jesse Ray's Barbecue in Las Vegas, the best in barbecue, Las Vegas style. Go to jesseraysbarbecue.com to order lunch, cater an event, or pick up a few bottles of our award-winning sauces. For the NCHC and NCHC.TV, subscribe to NCHC.TV and catch all of the action from the toughest conference in college hockey. Tag Creative Group. Search T. Grand Rudd on Redbubble.com and have us create that unique design for your business or gift-giving needs. The Spaghetti Shack, classic Italian comfort food quickly with three locations, two in Tempe and one in Pine Top at TheSpaghettiShack.com. Caesars Entertainment Resorts, casinos worldwide. It's where the action is, and the resorts are in town. FedEx, the official package delivery company of Ice Time Hockey West. Liberty University, hockey education and faith with equal passion at liberty.edu. College Hockey, Inc., your NCAA hockey resource. College Hockey West Weekly and all of the IceTimeHockeyWest.com podcasts are live on the Podbean app. Help others find the podcasts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the shows at ITHSW Podcasts, all one word. That's ITHSW Podcasts, all one word, on your favorite podcast platform. College Hockey West Weekly and all of our weekly podcasts are part of the IceTimeHockeyWest.com network.
Very well done, my friend. Again, a big thank you to Michael Weissman for joining us and giving us some great insight as always. Looking forward to the practices and the press conferences tomorrow. Again, thanks to Nick Maxson for joining us and helping us out all week on this great Frozen Four week. Paul, thanks to you for all your hard work. Hang in there in the palatial estate. Don't let the servants take too much advantage of you. And we'll see everybody again tomorrow night to wrap up the Wednesday practice and press conferences for the NCAA Frozen Four. Good night, everybody.
Good night.